This is Mireya Loza. It is the 30th of June, 2008. I'm interviewing Ventura Gutierrez for the Bracero History Project. Ventura, we had talked before about your early organizing and Bracero Proa. You had said that a situation with your grandmother had become the impetus for Bracero. Bracero Proa. Can you explain a little bit about what happened with your grandmother?
It was the third week of March, 1998, and my maternal grandmother, Lucia Mendez, when I returned to Purandiro from Morelia, where we had a general assembly of migrant workers and their families, where we established the Aquí Allá project, the Here and There project, where we identified one of the priorities, braceros and widows of migrant workers. My grandmother, as I entered my uncle's house, Jose Mendez, where she lived, presented me with an identification or an ID that was given to my grandfather, Joaquin Mendez, when he was a bracero by the Secretaría de Gobernación, with his photo. And she asked me to determine if she had the right to a benefit because he worked in the United States. I did a search with the Railroad Workers Union in Los Angeles, contacted the railroad company, Union Pacific, in the Los Angeles area, also in Texas, between March and April of that year, and I was unable to establish if my grandfather or my grandmother had a right to some sort of benefit. So on the way back to Michoacán, I passed through El Paso, as I normally did, going from Mexico to California or California to Mexico, and I stopped in to visit Carlos Marentes in El Paso at his community center. And part of the conversation that we had dealt with the Ex Braceros 4264. I informed Carlos that I was interested in that topic, and without saying a word, he took me to a room in the center at the end of a hallway. He opened the door and he had it in boxes, micas de braceros, contracts, other documents, in alphabetical order by state, from Aguascalientes to Zacatecas. And I'm talking about the original documents, which surprised me, because I met Carlos and I knew Carlos since 1986, and I always thought of him as an honest person. I still do. I just think that he made a mistake in receiving those original documents and keeping them to this date, not returning them to their legitimate owners. And after I reviewed some of the documents, he gave me a copy of the Bracero Agreement signed between the United States and Mexico in 1942. I read it, and as I read the document, I came across a section that talked about the 10% savings fund, the 10% deduction from their paycheck to create a fund, which was to be used to purchase agricultural equipment that the workers would take back to their home communities and work the land to supplement their family income. And And if they didn't do that, then the agreement very clearly states that the 10% deduction was to be returned to the workers by the Mexican government. A 10% deduction that the owners of the railroad companies, the growers deducted from their checks, deposited in two banks, Wells Fargo in the case of agricultural workers, and Union Trust Bank in the case of railroad workers. All these monies went to the National Mexican Bank that was deposited in two different banks, Banco Nacional del Ahorro in the case of the railroad workers, y el Banco Nacional Agrícola in the case of the agricultural bracero workers. And I asked Carlos to join in the effort that I and three braceros initiated on the 15th of May, 1998. He declined. I asked him a couple of the times after the first meeting in Purandiro, Michoacan. He declined. He said he was interested only in writing a book about that labor experience and constructing a monument in El Paso in memory of the El Braceros 4264. I returned to Purandiro. I told my grandmother that I didn't come across any possibility of a benefit for her, but that there might be something for her in the 10% savings fund. And with that, I then asked José Ángel Bautista and another compañera, Josefina Cruz, collaborators of our project here and there in Purandiro, Michoacán. José was there in Purandiro, in the office, the service center that we established on the 1st of July, 1996, that was inaugurated by Ingeniero Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas. Josefina Cruz came in a year later, and they both stayed until 1998, José Ángel till December of that year. Josefina, during the summer of 98, returned to Mexico City, but both of them helped organize the first El Bracero meeting that I know of, since Bert Corona and Dr. Ernesto Galarza in 1973 and met with the ex-president Luis Echeverria to resolve this 10% savings fund issue, which I was totally unaware of until Bert, a couple of years after we initiated the movement, and just before he passed away, he informed us that he and Dr. Ernesto Galarza had tried to resolve this issue back in 1973 with Echeverria, but that they were unsuccessful, and he asked us to keep organizing the ex braceros, those that are affected, that they committed a big error in thinking that leaders of migrant workers, spokespersons of ex braceros, could resolve this matter directly with Luis Echeverria. And Bert, before his death, never realized, never knew why they were unable to resolve this issue with Luis Echeverria. And they didn't resolve it because Luis Echeverria's administration took the last monies in the 10% savings fund by creating a industrial and commercial bank. As his administration started, they shifted the funds, the remaining funds from the El Bracero 10% fund into this bank. And at the end of administration, he returned peanuts back to the original holding bank of this fund. But I think the most important thing is that this movement was, I think, the third serious effort since after 1942 to try to retrieve the savings fund. The first was in the 50s. The Mexican government tried to retrieve the deposits deducted from railroad workers that were in the Railroad Worker Pension Fund administered out of Joliet, Illinois, deposits that are still there to this day. And they were not retrieved because in 1959, when there was a legislative proposal in the U.S. Congress to return these monies to the Mexican workers that worked in the railroad, maintenance of way railroad workers, John F. Kennedy, then a senator, with the ambition of being the first Catholic president of the United States, sold out to one of the racist, most racist union of those times in the United States, maintenance of railroad worker union, and because he needed the support of organized labor, the bill died for lack of his support and others, and the monies were not returned. Byrd and Dr. Galarza and others were unsuccessful in the early 70s, and our effort is the third effort since 1942 to try to retrieve a part of, if not the total amount due to these workers. The 15th of May, 1998, we organized the first meeting in the Salon Hall named Arco Iris in Curandiro, Michoacán. Four ex-braceros showed up. And there we made a commitment to see how far we could go in retrieving the 10% savings fund for the ex-bracero workers 1942-64, with the understanding and commitment that neither side, myself, or they would sell out during the process. And I'm glad to say that both parties have held their word, except for one of the four ex-braceros that was at that meeting, who has since passed away. And after that, the first meeting, the first press conference was in Morelia, Michoacán in October. I don't recall the exact date. It was first part of October. I think it was the 8th of October. And that was the beginning of getting the word out to the public. A month later, in November, we held another meeting in Moroleón, Guanajuato. Had plenty of assistance. As a matter of fact, several of the mushroom worker strikers that participated in a strike that I organized in Kennedy Square, Pennsylvania, in April 1st of 1999, were present, supported the effort, let the other ex-bracero workers in attendance know that they could confide in me and our effort, that they knew me well, and that helped us get the organizing drive off the ground. We carried out no other activities until mid-January in Irapuato, Guanajuato, because Irapuato, Guanajuato was the principal contracting point for braceros who went to the United States to work in agriculture after the office in Mexico City closed down after World War II. The railroad workers were initially contracted out of Mexico City, then San Luis Potosí. They kicked them out of there, and they ended up until the end of World War II in Querétaro. But the primary site in central and all of southern Mexico was Irapuato, Guanajuato, and I felt that if we could be successful there, we could succeed in the entire country in organizing a significant number of ex-braceros, or widows, or children into this effort that began demanding the return of the 10% savings fund. And we had a decent turnout. It's about 50 ex-bracero workers. They were inspired. They brought their documents. They told their stories, and they joined our effort. After that, talking about 1999, we went all over the place with the two organizations, La Unión Campesina Democrática in Michoacán, based in Morelia, and La Unión Campesina Emigrantes Mexicanos in Guanajuato, based in Irapuato. The first was headed up by Margarito Fierro, that later became Diputado Federal, and voluntarily left the movement. With this organization, those individuals that had affiliated with this organization continued participating with us, and he left because he felt that he didn't see any benefit, right, in continuing. He left without any conflict, without any ill feelings. But in Irapuato, where the leader of the organization, USEM, was Aaron Cabañas, there we ousted him on the 7th of October, 1999. I did so personally in Mexico City at a meeting with the legal representatives of Ban Rural, Relaciones Exteriores, and I forget what other dependencia of the Mexican government was present, representatives of other organizations that were participating in a network that we called Red Migratoria, or Corriente Migratoria, Migrant Current, because the initial effort was in Purandiro, was started by Union Sin Fronteras. It's a local organization, nonprofit, based in Coachella, California. That transformed into Migrant Current, Corriente Migratoria, that involved Mexican groups, primarily UCD in Michoacán and USEM in Guanajuato, because I had the feeling that if we could involve established Mexican organizations in the rural part of Mexico, that we could rapidly organize the ex-braceros and conclude the effort. But unfortunately, as the most organization in Mexico están viciados, ¿verdad? They have the same bad, corrupt practices as the Mexican government and half of the members of the Mexican society. You know? And Aaron Cabañas attempted to use this movement organization to become the president in Guanajuato of his party, PRD. And in August of 99 in Irapuato, at a gathering that he convened, I left because he was distributing propaganda supporting his candidacy for the presidency of PRD in Guanajuato. Okay. But prior to that, and after January 99, after accompanying Aaron and UCD and USEM to San Luis Potosí and Querétaro and Aguascalientes and other states, where I noticed that the primary interest was not resolving the issue of the 10% savings fund, but generating income. Okay, I withdrew from these individuals, these organizations. I already stated from Maron in August, and officially ousted him on the 7th of October, 1999, at a meeting in Mexico City. But prior to that, we had other meetings in Irapuato, Guanajuato. The biggest was on the 19th of July, 1999. We had about 5,000 attend at the Revolucion Stadium in Irapuato. There, we asked the people to join us in an effort in joining us on the 23rd of July, Friday the 23rd of July, the date that the Bracero Agreement was signed in 1942. How many years later? 57 years later. It was a Friday, and what we did is we shut down the regional office of Ban Rural, wanting answers to our petition, to our demand, the retrieval of the 10% savings fund. We forced the regional director of Ban Rural to fly in from Guerrero, I believe, in a helicopter, because we had 2,000 ex-braceros and their family members there threatening to march to Mexico City. They attended us. We agreed to a meeting on the 4th of August in the national offices of the legal staff of Ban Rural in Mexico City. And I selected that date because that date was the date that a memorandum of understanding was presented. I don't remember if, I think from the United States to Mexico. It was signed on the 10th of August, and after that first meeting with Ban Rural on the 4th of August, where we had a second meeting on the 10th of August, we applied a lot of symbolism during those early days. We wanted to meet on the 4th and the 10th of August because between those dates, the memorandum of understanding to implement the Bracero Agreement were signed, were presented and signed. And on the 10th of August of 1999, the legal representatives of Ban Rural committed to doing an in-depth search study to determine if the savings fund existed, what happened to the money, et cetera, et cetera. And at a meeting after the 10th of August, which was the 7th of October, 1999, Ban Rural, the legal staff for Ban Rural, presented a two-page document where they indicated that the savings fund had only existed till 1948, I believe. 48. And that was unacceptable to us, but that was their position, and their position is documented, and at the very least, we feel that with the legal process, we'll be able to retrieve the 10% savings funds and all the interest accrued, at least for the ex-braceros between 42 and 48, because they admit to it. Okay, they deny the fund existed until 1964, and after that meeting, we parted ways, and in November, I believe, 11th of November, Aaron Cabañas mobilized people in Guanajuato into Mexico City. Did a picket line in front of the Secretaría de Relaciones Exteriores, Ban Rural, the Mexican government always, ¿verdad? To create division, open the doors to him, and they met, they discussed the same issue, and Aaron attempted to take away the group that we were organizing in the DF, and I think if I had not been present at the meeting after the 11th of November, they may have succeeded. I established the first groups in Mexico City, in Tijuana, and Los Angeles. And after that, I had the intentions of establishing a group in Monterrey and Guadalajara, the principal centers of the media in Mexico that could give coverage to this effort. And for me, having a group organized in Mexico City was key, ¿verdad? And fortunately, we were able to keep this group from falling into the hands of Aaron Cabañas and Hussein. That basically brought to a closure 1999. The only thing I think I left out, and I don't recall right now, but in February of 99 or February of 2000, I went to the National Archives in Washington, D.C., to the archives in San Bruno, close to San Jose, San Francisco, because there's, I believe, three regional offices of the National Archives in San Bruno, Chicago, and New York. I found a partial list of ex-braceros, primarily those that worked in the railroad. And I also discovered for myself that Puerto Ricans, Jamaicans, Newfoundlanders, and Canadians also worked as braceros in the United States during the war years. Okay, and Italians and Germans, prisoners that were based in Texas and New Mexico. But I think the most interesting thing that I discovered was that in the basement of the Agriculture Department, which is like two or three football fields long, are perhaps the list of the ex-bracero workers between 42 and 64. But I determined very quickly that I don't have, we don't have, and nobody's going to give the resources to dig those documents up. And the only thing I left Washington, D.C. with, apart from the partial list of ex-braceros, and documents that show that, you know, workers from other countries near the United States, which I already mentioned, also were contracted as braceros. I went away with a certified copy of the actual agreement that was signed in 1942. It exists. It's in the National Archives of the United States in D.C. The actual document that was bracero agreement that was signed. And back to 2000, we started off the year with the approval in the House of Representatives. It was in April of 2000. The approval Special Commission on Ex Braceros within the House of Representatives that still exists till today. A commission headed up by Sergio Acosta Salazar, ex federal diputado from Michoacán, which we consider the first traitor of the Bracero movement, because he initially supported payment to the Ex Braceros 4264. And in April of that year, he and Eddie Barón, another diputado federal from the PRI, perhaps the first federal House of Representatives diputado migrante, because he lived, in Carson City or somewhere near Los Angeles, betrayed us, betrayed the cause, and they supported an amendment to the initial document that created the special commission, calling for payment only to those ex braceros between 42 and 46. This happened on the 26th of April of 2000, a day after we concluded our first mobilization to Mexico City. It started in Los Angeles, went to Santa Ana, Los Angeles, Mexicali, and all the different points through the Pacific route, central part of Mexico to Mexico City. And it was initiated in Yakima, state of Washington, myself and Ezequiel Morfin. Okay? And it was supposed to have been a caravan of a dozen, 20 cars. And at the beginning of this caravan, it was only he and I, and we almost lost his vehicle before arriving in Oakland. It was conking out on us. He accompanied me to L.A., returned back to Washington, and then from there I went on to Santa Ana, Tijuana. Other individuals took over the reins of the caravan, and we, through internet, through computer, I have to say I, because I'm the one that did it. I convened meetings at all the sites where the symbolic caravan was to arrive. We had good participation, and simultaneously I was communicating with other coordinators in other states, asking them to support, to participate, to be with us on the 25th of April 2000 in front of the House of Representative Chambers in Mexico City. And I still recall that that morning, after spending the evening there on the sidewalk, a group of us slept outside the House of Representatives in Mexico City on the 24th. And on the 25th, about 5:30, 6 in the morning, buses started to arrive. About 1,500 participated. And it was all through computer. But I was in contact by phone with many of the coordinators, and I thought we would have about 800 participation, but we had over 1,500. It was impressive. But Sergio Costa Salazar and Eddie Barón betrayed us. Okay, while we were outside supporting them, they were inside modifying the document that established the special commission on behalf of Ex Braceros to read 42 to 46 instead of 64. That forced us to go to battle, legislatively speaking, against them. And fortunately, it remained 42-64. But a month earlier, in March, the Special Commission and Gobernación had reached an agreement to conduct a census, but only of individuals between 42 and 46. And we opposed this. Matter of fact, we didn't participate. Yeah? We didn't participate until they were forced to to include all individuals between 47 to 64, because at that time, 98% of the individuals that were participating in the movement belonged to our organization. I think they had about 2,000 individuals go to the regional offices of Andorra to register to be part of this census. Nobody qualified for payment, and because they needed our participation, they needed to justify the results, they agreed to include those individuals between 47 and 64. Okay? And when it was all over, 104,000 registered in the census. Okay? But most people thought that it was as there was a registration process that would lead to some sort of payment, but it wasn't. It was just a census. The majority, I think, of the ex-workers never understood this, and I don't think they're interested in understanding this fact. But it was a census, not a registro, and certainly not an accreditation process to determine who would receive payment and who not. That's 104,000. This census was conducted between the 7th of April and the 15th of October of 2000. This basically brought to a conclusion the year 2000, the first registro. They concluded on the 15th of October, although the balance of that year and the following year until they formally had to present the results to the Special Commission and to the House of Representatives, you know, diputados federales, senators, governors, everybody got into the act and asked favors of Gobernación to include people from their organizations in the states, which they did, and the figures went from like 80,000-90,000 to 104,000 at the end of that phase of, you know, giving favors to all sort of groups and legislators to include their people. In 2001, we started off the year with a shutdown of the national offices of Banderal in Mexico City. It was the 7th of April. And we met with the Banderal legal representatives and representatives from other government departments. And we reached an agreement to resolve the issue. But the representatives of the Secretaría de Trabajo y Previsión Social, they want to sign the document. And on the 9th, 2 days later, as we were outside the national offices of Barra that we shut down, these government representatives returned with a document, a single-page document, one paragraph, where they offered including the ex-braceros into the Seguro Social Mexicano. Okay? And we laughed in their face. I just folded, I remember I folded the sheet in half and I put it in my pocket. And that was our answer to them. They went away. And a day later, on the 10th of April, as I and a student that was doing her thesis work with us. I had to give her name, Emma Badovinos Plata, who who was going to the airport to leave to Chicago to do some investigative work relative to the railroad workers in Gillette, Illinois. And she took the place of Violeta Dominguez, because Violeta Dominguez was the person that had been contacted initially to go do this work. She decided not to go, and Emma went in her place. And as we went to the airport, por Viaducto, right in front, alongside the National Office of Banrural, they say that at least a dozen Suburbans, okay, parked in front of the Volkswagen taxi that we're riding in, and behind us, okay, a Volkswagen taxi that was parked outside of Banrural that I had noticed. Okay, it seems a little strange, and where two individuals popped out and told us that they had been sent by La Jornada to do a special feature on us. Well, it was a moment where we needed front page headlines, okay? And we believed them. And one of them, the male, went in the Volkswagen with us, and the Suburbans blocked us in front and in the back, and it just stalled the entire traffic in like four or five lanes. And I still remember, if you went through the rearview mirror, one man got off a red and black Suburban that was directly behind us, opened the Volkswagen door and said, "Get out." And I said, "Get out, nada." So he grabbed me by the arm. And, for my stature, ¿verdad? I had very strong, a lot of strength in my legs. I could pump 400 pounds or more with my legs in high school. And I just braced myself with my feet inside the Volkswagen, and he couldn't pull me on, okay? Until he used my arm as como palanca, okay? And boom, out I went onto the ground, the street, and two or three other men joined in, and they started beating me and threatening me. ¿Verdad? I understood that they were gonna do away with me. ¿Verdad? Get rid of me, and my time had come. All kinds of profanity. ¿Verdad? And as they stood me up, I got loose of them. Okay, and I just visualized being in a football game. I played football in high school, and I just got away from them, and I started running in between the cars, and it was like a Hollywood movie. Okay, and just as I was gonna jump atop of the hood of a car and run from car to car to get away, I slipped and I fell down, and they got me again. And I got a hold of myself of the frame of a car, the window, it was open, and about two of them pulled me from with the other arm, and y me desgarré. My left breast, and they threw me to the ground again, and they picked me up and they threw me in a Suburban, and there was two men in front, one in the back and one to my side, and he immediately put his hands on my neck, face down on the back seat, and we drove for over an hour. And all I could hear was cellular phones ringing back and forth, and the supposed representative of La Jornada also jumped into the Suburban, okay, and he was crying. Later, we found out that they were fakes. Okay, but he acted out that crying scene, that he wanted to call his attorney. Okay, they told him that he had a right to that, and they would allow him to do that. And then when I heard that, I asked for the same thing. But I told him that I wanted a call Ingeniero Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas, and they started laughing. And the driver said, give me his number and I'll call him for you. And I said, I have it right here in my back pocket. And silence came in. And then I said, better yet, let me call my government. What government? I'm a U.S. citizen. Boom. Cellular phone started ringing back and forth again. I later found out that they thought I was a Mexican national, because they had prepared, 2 days before this incident, they had prepared a denuncia against me for sabotage. Okay? And it had the date, 7th of April. Okay? Well, we arrived the 7th of April. And this happened on the 10th of April. And they had me down as a Mexican national. And I don't know what happened, okay? But a half hour later, they arrived at the national headquarters of the PGR, right there next to the monument to the Mexican Revolution. And they asked me to get off the Suburban. They walked me into the reception area, and they just threw me in there and they left. They disappeared. And I saw the woman that supposedly was the reporter of La Jornada there. You know? And it's when it dawned on me that it was all an illegal operation to try to pin a sabotage accusation against me. You know? It was all prepared, drummed up. And they held me and a couple of individuals there in a waiting room for at least an hour. They took us up to the third floor, and they wanted me to declare that I had voluntarily gone to present my declaration. I told them that I would not sign it, okay? And I didn't. And they released me. And I don't recall if that day, same day in the evening or the following day, the attorney Barbara, I forget her last name right now, she's the one that Amparo on behalf of the Italians that were ousted from Chiapas right around that time, defended the individuals from ETA who were arrested in Mexico City. One of the best attorneys in Amparos in Mexico. And she accompanied me to the PGR. They showed her the file, because in Mexico, only the attorney has access to your file. Okay? And the first thing she said is, I thought you said this happened on the 10th. Yeah. Well, here it says the 7th. Wow. She says, oh, this was all prepared. Right? It just... para darte un susto, Ventura. Okay? I said, don't worry about it. And we left. And that was placed under the table. Right? Under the carpet. Never heard about that again. As a matter of fact, in following meetings, I asked them, okay, when are you going to proceed with that denuncia? Right? And they would just chuckle, just smile, and keep quiet. Right? Do it. I would tell him. And that shutdown of Bandurán lasted until the 25th, 6th, or 7th of May. Okay? And almost everybody abandoned that effort, except for the Mexico City group. That rotated by platoon, five in each group, every evening, 24 hours a day, we were there. Okay? and I, Jose Angel, I think we're the only ones in terms of organizers, representatives, that stayed there in the little igloo tents. But the FA group, Grupo, was there every day, the 24 hours, just five at a time, but they were there. And we lifted this this shutdown on the 26th, 7th of May, because on the 16th or 17th of May, I went to Chicago. Emma Baduino's Platos had called. She had already sent in April, on the she sent in April copies of the deposits of nine ex-braceros that worked in the railroad, and then she called and said that she had convinced an attorney named Jonathan Rothstein Hughes and Sokol, Hessler, Hughes and Sokol, something like that, Chicago. They're the ones that won that lawsuit against Western Union, Valuta, and I don't know what other telegram operations that send este money orders, ¿verdad? To Mexico. And I met with Jonathan in his office around the 17th of May. He agreed to take the case, ¿verdad? And I returned back to Mexico. He asked to lift that shut down because, you know, he was going to take the case and it was not necessary to continue with that. So we went back to Mexico, had a gathering, lifted the shutdown. We went away and waited for Jonathan Rothstein to arrive in Morelia on the 6th or 7th of July of that year, at Plaza Carrillo, where the ex-braceros in Morelia normally meet. And he announced at that time that he was taking the case, and he interviewed ex-braceros from different estates, and he selected one, Liborio Perez, who still lives. He's 80-something from Oaxaca, but he lives just outside of Mexico City in the state of Mexico. And he became the only defendant in all of Mexico, one of eight in total, the others from the United States, primarily from California, and that revived the effort. Okay, as did the Caravana de las Botas, ¿verdad? To the first mobilization to the House of Representatives of Mexico City, and as did the shutdown of the National Office of Bandurán. But we waited after the 6th, 7th of July, the rest of that month, and the rest of that year, and no lawsuit was filed. Okay, that's how we ended that year, 2000. The social movement that had initiated a legislative front in Mexico when the special commission was formalized initiated a judicial front in the United States that year, and in 2001 in February, I believe it was the 9th of February, I went to San Cristobal Chiapas and I commandeered one of the buses in the Marcos caravan, the Zapatun. I have my ticket. I don't know where it's at, but I still have my ticket. Yeah, I think they charge us $10 or something like that. Just outside Querétaro, on the 2nd of March, there was an accident. Because a diputado federal from the PAN has stated that he was going to block the caravan, and he did it. You know, Autopista Mexico City Querétaro, just outside of Querétaro, And I still remember.
One of the buses behind us, because we were going in a decline,
boom, zoomed just alongside us, and the driver of our bus said, he lost his brakes. And I said, how do you know? Well, he signaled to me that he lost his brakes. And he went over to motorcycle policemen and hit the Suburban, and I think one or both of them died. And all the traffic was stalled. And we're sitting there in the bus. And somebody was reading La Jornada, and that knew I was involved with the Ecroceros, and he said, Ventura, look at this. A little note, article, that Jonathan Rothstein had presented a lawsuit in 8th District Court, San Francisco. We had the Ecroceros. I got off the bus, hooked up a ride on a little pickup truck, Toyota pickup truck, to the Central in San Juan de los Rios, and from there I went to Morelia and organized a press conference for the following day to announce that. Okay, and that breed, it's like all these points, you know, like the beginning of the movement and Caravana de las Botas and establishing a special commission, the Caravana de las Botas, and you're gonna have to scratch. The Caravana de las Botas, because that didn't take place until later on. Okay. And the lawsuit. Okay. When we were going into a valley with a movement, okay, people were withdrawing. The lawsuit, like the other actions that we took every year, breathed new life into the movement. And that the lawsuit, okay, breathed a lot of life into the movement. Okay, it was when the Ecroceros felt that lawsuit in the United States was going to lead to something, because they didn't have very much confidence or faith in the Mexican government or the legislative process. Okay, they were always wanting us to resolve it in the United States. So when the lawsuit was filed, bunches of people came back, and a lot of other people joined in on the effort. That was 2001. Then 2002, fíjate que es 2002 is when we did the Caravana de las Botas. That's when we did our first mobilization to the House of Representatives, okay? Okay, now the sequence is correct now. And that helped pressure Gobernación and the Special Commission to conduct the first census. It wasn't when I told you in 99 or 2000, it was in 2003 after the Caravana de las Botas. The census was carried out. I already explained that part. That took us till the end of 2003. In 2004, we had a legislative proposal, okay, to pay. It gathered interest within the House of Representatives, but it stalled in commission. And then came the invasion of Fox's Ranch on the 7th of February of 2004. They got a lot of notoriety, and I think that was what finally gave this cause national, international attention, and brought pressure to bear to to approve the legislation. Okay. We went back to Fox's Ranch on the 20th of November of that year, 4,000. The first time when we went into the Hacienda, it was only 2,000, the 7th of February. On the 20th of November, 4,000. And then the 10th of January of 2005, we went back again. Okay, the 21st of March, we went back again. And then the final was on the, 7th of February, 21st of March, and 20th of November, three times in 2004. The 10th of January of 2005, and then on the 25th of May, okay? And they were begging us not to go on that occasion, because one day before the 24th of May, they approved the legislation that was approved was published in the Diario Oficial. Okay, there was going to be payment, but we still went. Okay, because we were already there, or already in the process. The legislation was approved. The regs were published. The second registration took place. But nobody got paid. In August of 2005, the windows were broken in at the offices of Gobernación. It was a big scandal, ¿verdad? Gave national attention again to the cause. I and nine other individuals, eight ex-braceros and a wife and an ex-bracero were arrested. We went to a jail. They only spent, I think, a night or two. They put bond to get out of jail. I didn't post it. They sent me to Reclusorio Oriente, where I spent about two or three nights. This helped initiate the payment process on the 15th of December 2005. Okay. I got out in August. A week later, I got out of a jail, posted a bond, and then in September, they arrested me again because they had committed some sort of error in the paperwork, yeah? And it justified arresting me again. And they increased the bond. Okay, I know what I was doing. I was going to the airport to get a flight to Ohio, to determine if Fox was an American citizen. Okay, because we had already given to La Jornada, and they published his birth certificate. Fox is a United States citizen. Okay, and we proved it. Okay, but nobody did anything. And because his father was from Cincinnati, Ohio, okay, and he migrated to his grandfather, and he migrated to Irapuato. Fox is a U.S. citizen. Okay, I have the documents. Porfirio has the original birth certificate. Okay, he was born in anyway. This incident at the Secretaría de Gobernación on the 17th of August. 2005 caused them, forced them to start paying on the 15th of December. Yeah? And that payment continued in 2006. Yeah. The second registration didn't take place in 2005. It took place in 2006. At the same time, they were paying some individuals. The first 23,000 of the first group of 42,000. They were conducting the second registration process that took place from the first 9 or 11th of November till the 10th of March of 2006, from 2005 to 2006. They came up with 170,000 new registries. But 20,000 of them are individuals that were asked in 2003 when they did the first census to get two witnesses to declare before a notary public that they had worked as a bracero, or that they were a widow or a child of an ex bracero 4264. And they did it. And then when it was all over, when the law was approved and published, they eliminated what we call la carta notarial. So there's 20,000 individuals in the country with their carta notarial that are going nowhere. And of the first group of 42,000, they still need to pay 19,080. There's 700 million pesos allocated in 2008 budget. And these individuals will receive their 38,000 pesos as soon as they publish the first list. Last year they published it on the 26th of June, and this year they haven't published it yet. Our organization is giving Calderon until today to publish it, and if not, then we're going to initiate a pressure campaign to force him and his government to publish the first payment list, and once that happens, that assures those 19,080 from the first group of 42,000 receipt of their 38,000 pesos this year. Okay, but I feel that Calderon and his government, his political architects and engineers, are gonna publish a list of 3,000 and some. Beginning in July, then in August, September, October, December, it totals to about 19,000. They're going to make observations to a new law that was approved between the 10th and the 22nd of April of this year in the Mexican Congress, but hasn't been published in the Federal Register in Mexico. And until that happens, it's not law. I think that at the same time they finish paying the 19,080 that are pending, they're going to return this new piece of legislation that was approved by the Mexican Congress on the 22nd of April to the next session, which begins on the 1st of September. Okay, to make corrections. Okay, it's going to be commas and dots and a word here and there. A pretext, political, legislative pretext, judicial pretext, to return it back and not have final approval until November of this year. And before Mexican Congress adjourns, goes on to recess for the winter months, they'll approve these observations, these changes made by the proposed by the federal government attorneys reviewing this matter, and then they'll publish a convocatoria, ¿verdad? For the accreditation process to begin 35 days after. Which will be sometime after Dia de los Reyes, the 6th of January of next year, for a 60-day period, January, February, March. The budget 2009 will be approved before the 15th of December of this year, and we've been told that there's a semi-official pact or understanding between the Comisión de Hacienda y Crédito Público and the Secretaría de Hacienda y Crédito Público that they're going to allocate 3,000 millones de pesos beginning next year over a three-year period between 2009-2012 to pay close to a quarter of a million that are going to be eligible and receive their to receive their payment of 30 8,000 pesos. And next year, it won't be in January or July when the first payment list will be on. I suspect it'll be published in April, and then May and June, and they're going to spend this mil millones de pesos in April, mil millones in May, mil millones in June, all before the elections on the 5th of July 2009, with the intentions of getting generating support, political electoral support for the PAN candidates for diputados, because next year the House of Representatives is just going to be replaced. Okay? And not only are they managing the times, with this case to benefit them, the government and their party politically, but they're doing it with all kinds of programs in the rural sector, because the PAN has very little support. It doesn't have the same support that they have in the cities, and they're spreading big bucks throughout rural Mexico, and with Ex-Vaceros, they're managing the times and the resources allocated to the payment of the Ex-Vaceros with the intent of winning votes on the 5th of July and tomorrow. If they didn't publish today, tomorrow we initiate a campaign against the government and the PAN. Okay? And on the 5th of July, 1 year before the election next year in Purandir, Michoacán, we are finally, after starting as a social movement, building a legislative front in Mexico, a judicial front in the United States, now in Mexico with Lamparo Federal. Yeah? I don't know if you're going to get a chance to interview Porfirio, but that's well on its way. We're a few steps from getting an answer from the Mexican government after 66 years if they're going to pay or not the 10% savings tax. And the only front that we haven't initiated to establish an integrated movement, okay, around this matter was a political front, because on the 5th of July in Durango, Michoacán, we're going to announce that we're going to participate in the electoral process that concludes on the 5th of July 2009, and somebody from our organization is going to be in the House of Representatives next year. And someone from our organization is going to be in the Special Committee of Ex-Vaceros. We are going to be the Special Commission of Ex-Vaceros next year, 2009 to 2012. And we're going to decide payment to the second group of $250,000 before they pass away in life. Como decimos en español, en vida. And it may conclude with participating in the next presidential election, because if the House of Representatives doesn't pay this second group of $250,000 between 2009-2012, then the presidential elections are going to decide whether payment is received in life or remains as inheritance for the sons and daughters of the Ex-Vaceros, widows of Ex-Vaceros 42 to 64. And como dice la consigna, 10 años de lucha y hasta el final. We're going to be there, ¿verdad? So they pay the last individual the $38,000, and when the ministers of the Mexican Supreme Court decide whether the Mexican government pays out the 10% savings fund, but only for those individuals that are exercising their judicial right to claim those monies. And at this time, it's only $15,000. Yeah? involved in this judicial process against the Mexican government to receive the 10% savings fund and the an identification certificate that legally takes the place of the contracts that were lost, because the contract is what you need to present to retrieve the 10% savings fund. Yeah? And I went real fast over the last couple of years, but I guess I'm tired.
Actually, I only have like a couple questions. Why now electoral politics?
Come on.
Why are you choosing to go through electoral politics now?
Oh, because to develop this movement, I had to repeatedly for 10 years state a fact that I am not a member of a political party in Mexico or the United States, that this movement is nonpartisan, okay? Mm-hmm. That this movement was not going to present them candidates or political parties or place condition on people to be a member of a party or one party or another or support a candidate or another in order to participate, in order to receive support from the separate. And we've held true to that, okay? And this helped convince a lot of people from all different parties, because we have people, half of the people from all kinds of parties, all the parties, the other half don't even vote, right? Mm-hmm. Eight parties, okay? So it was, a fresh voice for all of us, okay? And I used to tell them that I haven't voted for over 20 years and I don't intend to vote the rest of my life. Yeah? I'm not a member of a party and I will not be a member of a conventional traditional party the rest of my life. Okay? And I've held true to that. Okay? Even when I was Alma Suplente last year, she went to a diputada local in Michoacán. She almost won. She came out in eighth place and the first six went in. I did not register with a PRD, Chief PRD. I didn't register with a PRD or other party. And the day of the election, I didn't vote. Okay? So I held true to my principles, to my public position relative to parties and to the voting process. And I can prove it, because there's no ballot. You know? I didn't sign in on the registration roll, but you have to sign in when they give you a ballot. They'll never find it because I never did. I didn't vote. But the primary problem, internal problem that we had in this movement is the interest that certain individuals from a certain party, all of them by coincidence, PRD, that wanted to be a diputado federal, okay? Placed that personal ambition or interest before the movement, before the cause, okay? When an individual places a personal interest or a group interest before the interest of the organization or the cause, that individual doesn't belong. Okay? So we ousted them, or they simply left. Okay? And last year there was an effort, a major effort, okay, to discredit me, to damage my character, to take over the organization, okay? And they were not successful, okay? They were not successful.
And if these people were wanting to run through a PRD platform?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And take the organization and the movement in that direction as political capital to gain for themselves a candidacy, okay? Mm-hmm. They failed, okay? Because we were monitoring them for 2 years before that, okay? We were ready or when they jump. And they jump too soon. Because there's a difference between putting your personal or group interest before the cause, okay, and entering the political process and wanting a position or positions within the House of Representatives, the Special Commission of the Braceros, when the organization or the movement needs it. The organization, the movement needs it right now, okay? And the need is because the new legislation is passed. As soon as Calderon, his government, publishes it, and I feel they'll do it, okay, then it's all about paying them in line, okay? And that's why at this moment the movement needs to be within the Cámara de Diputados, where they approve the budget, okay? Because in Mexico, it's a Comisión de Hacienda y Crédito Público in the Cámara de Diputados that approves the budget, not the executive branch or the Senate. The House of Representatives approves the budget, so we need to be there. And by coincidence, they're being replaced, all of them, because there's no re-election in Mexico next year. Okay? We need to be there. We need to be on the inside. We need to be the Special Commission of Equal Service. We need to assure for the movement that they're gonna pay the second group of 250,000 next year or between 2009 and 2012.
Mm-hmm. Other than people who have left or been outed,
because if we don't do it for ourselves, nobody else is gonna do it. Mm-hmm.
But other than people who've been outed because of their own political gain, have other people been outed for other reasons?
I can tell you, everybody that's been ousted. Baldomero Capiz was one of the first in Los Angeles, a group that I started at Casita Olvera, simply because he's a rat with 2 feet. You feel me? Asking people once a month for $10, $20, right? Mm-hmm. $100, $200, $300. Okay, he was living off of this. And then we just had to get rid of him. Okay, the first effort in 2000, half of the groups in California didn't go along. A year later, they were convinced, and we ousted him. Okay, mm-hmm. Jose Garcia, his cohort in Tijuana, another gentleman from Oaxaca in Ensenada, ousted. Currently, this last year, Inez Delgado in Tijuana, okay, because she used 30,000 pesos from the Carta 3 de Amparo Federal that people gave for them, for a quinceañera, for her granddaughter. And right now, she's before the Ministerio Público in Tijuana. As a matter of fact, on the 13th, they start calling people in to declare, ¿verdad? And she's going to pay that money, right, return it, or she's going to go to jail. Enriqueta Quintero, same thing, $500,000 there. Okay, my cousin, Pantoja Mendez, Rogelio, in San Luis Potosí, $30,000. But there, we already retrieved that money because I made him believe that I was going to buy a Toyota pickup truck for him. I lost $1,000. I gave him $1,000 to make him believe that I was going to pay the $4,500. I put it under my name, took it to Michoacán, sold it, and we retrieved that money. There, the problem was resolved. Sofia Valenzuela in Hermosillo, close to $250,000 from the Cartas 3 del Amparo Federal. Profesor José Santos, an attorney, a former coordinador in Morelia, in Michoacán. There, we're talking about $1,000,000. But he returned under heavy pressure from us, $750,000, and Alma is currently suing him, the Ministerio Público, for the other $250,000 that belonged to people from Pascuaro, Curando, and La Piedad, people that gave the money to her that she deposited in the account where he was a primary signature. Adriana in Aguascalientes, Otarrata, we're talking about $400,000 there. Pablo Rendón, Sierra Gorda de Querétaro, 600 cards, Cartas 3 there, and the biggest rat of all, Marta Suarez Cantú in Mexico City, and finally, the lawsuit was filed on the 15th of May, 2008, against her, And I suspect that the next one will be Professor Alfonso Lozano from Iguala Guerrero. That's why we're here today. You know? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, the next day, and we have a meeting. The spots are already running as of today in Chilpancingo for a meeting there on the 3rd. And we're going to go, Alma and I, we're going to go to all the places that we know that the thousands of ex-voceros of the state live, that affiliated with us, but during the last year haven't had contact with us, and we're here to clear up a lot of doubts and questions that they surely have, and we're going to end up with this process of retrieving monies from the Cartas Tres del Amparo Federal to the legitimate owners in Oaxaca against another attorney that participated with us, that will conclude the legal process against these rats with 2 feet, ¿verdad?
But the money was collected for legal fees, right?
Yeah. Ahora, persons like, and you've already heard it, or you'll hear it, from primarily two individuals, Violeta Dominguez, ¿verdad? Which really surprised me, her shift in attitude and, towards my person and the organization, and Rosa Marta Zárate. Okay? And the only thing I have to say there, okay, because nobody has left or has been ousted for personal reasons. Nobody. Okay? But the problem there with Violeta and Rosa Marta is that Violeta, a close friend, Rosa Marta Zárate, who was my compañera for 4 years, 2001, 2005, the personal or intimate relationship soured, ¿verdad? It was in 2005, 2006, at the point of, we ended the relationship, and immediately thereafter, ¿verdad? By accident, pasó, me crucé con Alma, and things happened, and Rosa Marta went crazy, ¿verdad? And tried to destroy the organization from within, on the Mexican side, and she failed, and on the 23rd of September last year, at an extraordinary National General Assembly in Guanajuato, she resigned, ¿verdad? And took nobody with her, ¿verdad? Because all the rats we had already ousted, ¿verdad? In March of last year, all those that I have mentioned. And in the United States, concretely in California, I think she, there she did impact the organization, but she's going to pay the consequences. Because all those groups where the leadership decided to withdraw from the organization without the consent of the membership, without an opportunity to know the real facts, ¿verdad? Are going to suffer, are already suffering, okay? Because Rosa Marta Zárate is not an organizer, okay? Es promotora, okay? And Rosa Marta is not gonna invest time or monies in organizing or maintain those groups organized, and little by little they're gonna go by the wayside and realize they made a big mistake in allowing her to convince them with all kinds of lies, when the true motive was something personal, ¿verdad? Against me for a relationship that went sour, period. Yeah? That's all I have to say about that.
But for the most part, people have been ousted because of other reasons.
For placing their personal or group interests before the organization or the cause of the ex-voceros. All of them, ¿verdad? Violeta and Rosa Marta are the only ones that have left and were never ousted and practically begged to be ousted, okay? to say that Ventura Gutierrez ousted them for personal reasons or for vengeance. Right? They left. Okay? They left out of their own free will because of this personal relationship between Rosa Martina and Gwendolyn Sauer. They should have been left to the side, separate from the work before us with the El Bracero movement. Right? She was unable to do it. She failed in her effort to destroy the organization, and she left.
Well, I won't keep you any longer, but thank you very much.
All right.